Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Jim Fowler back to the broadcast. Jim is the Chief Information Officer of General Electric, the iconic $149 billion industrial company based in Fairfield, Connecticut. Jim recently ascended to the corporate CIO role in October of 2015 after having been the CIO of GE Capital. Prior to those two roles, Jim held positions within every business unit of GE, with the exception of GE Healthcare. He's been with the organization since the year 2000. Jim holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Management Information Systems and Marketing from Miami University of Ohio and an MBA from Xavier University. I recently caught up with Jim by phone in his office in Connecticut, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed the talent management, succession planning, and career planning that are the hallmarks of GE, Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed his methods of securing the company's data. We also discussed how he has organized himself in his new role as CIO of GE, his business partnerships across multiple levels of the organization, and his vision for the industrial internet, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Jim Fowler, welcome back to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me back.
It's a pleasure. It is timely, certainly, as well. In our last conversation a number of months back, you were the Chief Information Officer of GE Capital, a unit that's since been sold off, and have taken over the role as global CIO for the entire company, General Electric. And I wonder if you could reflect a little bit about the transition, how you found out about the new role, how you began to prepare for the ascension to the role. How did the news of this opportunity come to you, and how did you think about your preparations?
Sure, Peter. The role really came about as a series of leadership succession movements were planned in the company. Those successions, based on a few retirements, led to the previous group CIO, Jamie Miller, taking on the CEO role of our transportation business. And so that planning really started to happen over the summer as some of the retirements came to be known. I think I found out about it probably in about mid-July. The plan was to have me step in as the group CIO later in the year. And so I had probably 30 days notice before the formal announcements went out to start to think through what I had to do to prepare for the role and to start to lay out a plan. And I used that 30 days to, one, spend some time with Jamie, really understanding what her thoughts were as I transitioned into the role, what things she felt like needed to be continued, what things she felt needed to be changed, and kind of get her feedback on what it had taken her to be successful in the role. And I also used the opportunity for myself just to reflect on my experiences in the company and where I thought the company was headed related to digital products, what we were doing related to growing the company in new areas, and how that was going to relate to the priorities for the IT function. And so that let me lay out a kind of 90-day plan, and I'm coming to the end of that 90 days having worked through a lot of the steps in the plan.
Can you describe your purview as CIO of GE? Obviously, it's a company that anyone who'd be listening to this would have heard of, but obviously it's also an organization that's incredibly complex. In fact, you've had a lot of experiences across that complexity, across the many business units that the organization has, a topic I'd like to raise in a moment. But how do you think about your role as global CIO?
Yeah, you know, we're a company that's in the midst of one of the largest transformations in our history, 130-year-old company. We've, for the last 15, 20 years, been as much a financial services company as we were an industrial company. and made the strategic decision last year to really start to change and focus more on the industrial side. As we do that, running this company, this long-scale, large-scale industrial company as a digital company is going to become more important. And so when I think about the role of CIO, the role of CIO has to be as much about being a great chief operating officer as it does a technologist. You have to be able to understand the complete value chain of how we serve our customers externally, understand where those value points are, how do we drive better service for customers, better cost, how do we improve our process and our touch time with customers. And so I think about my role when I'm sitting with the executive team as one of an operating officer, where I'm going to highlight with my view of how those end-to-end processes connect, where the opportunities are to change the way we work to serve our customers better. So when I measure myself on what we've done as a function to drive growth from a revenue perspective, or what we've done to drive gross margin improvement, or how we're driving cash generation or cash improvement in the company. I think that's really started to change the way all of the IT leaders across the company think about themselves as not being just technology leaders, but being business leaders who can see a better way to run the company going forward.
I'd love to actually dive a little deeper into that, Jim. A lot of your peers as global CIOs of big companies don't necessarily, in answering a question like the one I just posed, so quickly get to the financial components. And I know that this is obviously your predecessor was a financial expert, having been the chief accounting officer for the company and having a deep financial background. But I find it interesting also that the more traditional CIOs, if I may describe your background in that way, also have a great cognizance of financials, which of course is, if you're going to be thinking about yourself as a chief operating officer of sorts, that it is a set of capabilities, a set of skills that are essential. Can you talk about the way in which you and peers of yours, former peers of yours as business unit CIOs and other technology leaders, how you develop the financial acumen to be able to speak in a peer sort of way with those people who have a deeper financial background?
In my career, I've worked in every GE business with the exception of GE Healthcare. And as I've worked in each of those businesses, I've served in different roles. I was a CIO of supply chain. I was a CIO that was responsible for all of our HR systems in the company. I had an IT role early in my career related to running the infrastructure. I've done other roles where I've had commercially operations, IT-faced roles with CRM tools, et cetera. And one of the things that you start to learn as you move across businesses and even across functions within each business is everybody's looking about how do you make the company more profitable? How do you help serve a customer better? And so, you know, when I'm in supply chain, what I quickly realized my job was to do was to provide visibility to inventory, because being able to hit on-time delivery from a customer perspective was important, and being able to manage inventory related to cash was important, and cycle time to reduce cost was important, right? So I learned very quickly that that's what the supply chain leader cared about. That was what they were graded on, and I was there to support them. I would say the same happened when I was in the HR role, or the same happened when I was in the commercial role. You learn very quickly that as a functional leader, I'm here to serve the business. I'm here to be their support. And what I've always found in every one of those roles, that the more that I could tie what I was doing to an outcome they cared about, the better I did and the more successful I was. And when you start to learn what they care about, 99% of the time, it goes back to a financial, a quality, or a customer metric. And so it's really through that evolution of roles that I've had within GE that I learned that my success was really measured by the success of the business partner that I was supporting.
You mentioned a moment ago the fact that digital is becoming an increasingly important topic in GE, certainly in other organizations as well. I know that you've been thinking a lot about the implementation of the industrial internet as a significant component of that. Can you talk a little bit about your vision for that, what it entails?
Yeah, so if you kind of step back and you think about the industrial world, there is a huge untapped amount of data on the operations side of the house that is really ripe for helping companies be more productive. So as we're in GE outside talking to our customers, our goal is to figure out how can we combine great information technology with the machines, right, the physical world of machines that's in the world today, to provide new outcomes to our customer, right? If you go talk to an airline or you go talk to a power company, just as I said in my role, that the better I can drive outcomes for my business partners, the more successful I am, we recognize as a company, the better that we can help our customers use their assets more profitably to get more out of the assets they're running, the more successful they are, and hence the more successful we are as a business partner or a supplier to that customer. And so our strategy around the digital industrial is really this recognition that machines are going to be more connected than ever, that those machines are generating data at exponentially greater rates than humans were in human cloud environments like you would for, say, an online retail organization, and that companies that can figure out a way to combine all of that data, all of that information off that hardware with how they run their companies are going to be more profitable. So bringing all that back into inside GE, how I think about that inside the company as the IT leader is I need to make GE be the best example of a digital industrial in the world. How can I take information that's coming off of equipment in our 400 manufacturing facilities around the world and use that to make those plants more productive? So, for example, we've been working on one of our legacy businesses, the lighting business, where we've been implementing technology within their Hendersonville plant that is taking lead times from 25 days down to 10 days and a 95% improvement in on-time delivery within that plant, all just by taking the information coming off the hardware and building some fairly sophisticated models that help us predict what's going to happen within that plant based on forecasted load, and we're able to streamline the way product goes through that plant. Or another example is, how do I help in our services business do better predictive maintenance at an asset to improve the overall uptime? So, for example, within our services business, we've implemented some condition-based maintenance software that combines all of our IT, our operations records, our information about the equipment with OT, the information coming off the locomotive, to drive $40 million in variable cost productivity by being able to maintain and replace parts that we know from a condition perspective, not a time perspective, are going to fail. And so my strategy is all around, how do I take all this great work we've done in IT in silos and combine it with machine data in ways that are going to drive outcomes for the company? I've got a big target. I've got $1 billion of productivity inside the company that I need to drive between now and 2020 that are all predicated on the ability to do what I just talked about.
Ambitious goals, certainly. It sounds remarkable. You also have alluded to Predix, a cloud software platform for the industrial internet. Can you talk a bit about the vision for that?
Sure. So Predix is the platform for the industrial internet. We have launched, we'll have successive launches throughout next year. And the idea behind the platform is that machine data is different than anything else we've seen. If you go to a typical cloud provider today, it's all based on this whole idea of a central model of data. We ingest all of the transactional data from my family this past weekend shopping online, and we use that to predict what products and services I may be interested in going forward, as a simple example. Well, I'm a family of five. We probably did 20 transactions last weekend because as we're getting close to the holiday season, and being able to track and store those centrally and be able to report off them and drive analytics off them is pretty easy. Now imagine you've got 5,000 aircraft engines, each generating a terabyte of data per flight per day. All of a sudden, the volume of transactions is hundreds of millions of times greater per unit, per asset, than what you would have seen in this traditional cloud-based world. And so Predix is really built to deal with that scale. It recognizes that you need a distributed cloud, that there are elements of it that are going to sit centrally, but there are elements that are going to be distributed at the asset level that's going to have to deal with both a connected and a disconnected universe. But at the end of the day, it is able to take an analytics base to be able to make an asset run better. And so this Predix platform is what we're doing 100% of our internal application development on. We're developing product not just for use inside GE, but for use by our customers. And we've already signed several partners who are also starting to build applications that will run on top of that platform. Pitney Bowes is an example where Pitney Bowes is using this platform to develop software that will help them optimize how their equipment is used against their customer base. It's a key strategy for us going forward and a big part of where we think the growth of the company is going to come from.
And did I note that the prediction there is $15 billion in revenue by 2020?
Yeah, so we'll grow software and technology to be $15 billion in total between now and 2020. We're about $5.5 billion today. So we've got $10 billion of growth before 2020 to come out of the software as a service and the platform space.
You alluded to earlier that you've worked in all of the business units of the organization except for healthcare. And one of the things I've always found fascinating in speaking with leaders from across General Electric is just how seriously career planning and succession planning is taken. You talked about, for instance, the time you were able to spend with Jamie Miller before she left the role and you ascended to the role that you're currently in. And it seems like a remarkably rare thing to have an executive, certainly a C-level executive, coming from the outside, almost always coming from the inside, and moreover, somebody who knows that they are on that path well before they take the position itself. Can you talk a little bit about the advantages? You began to allude to some of the advantages of just understanding GE writ large before coming into this role. But I'd also love to understand from you just philosophically and culturally how the organization operates in ensuring that leaders not only have depth in some of the functional areas that they're responsible for, but breadth across the organization.
Sure. So as I said, I've worked in every GE business with the exception of our healthcare unit. And within each one of those units, I've held very different jobs. Like I said, supply chain in one role, CIO of a business in another, CTO of infrastructure. So I've gotten these very broad roles that have allowed me to go deep in technology, where I could become the subject matter expert around an area of technology or an area of the platforms that we support, while learning different business models. I started off in our aviation business, came into the company from the outside as a systems administrator doing Unix administration and Windows NT administration, and that provided me the opportunity to really learn about the aviation business as well as go deep in my trade. And one of the things that you'll find in our structure is that we really view it as everyone's job to teach the people that work for them how to do what they do so that they can go do something else, right? That's a measure of success. One of the things you won't find in our culture is people who want to hoard their knowledge or their information because they feel like that's their power and that will keep them in their role. It's quite the opposite. People view it as their job to teach the next generation so that they can move on to the next thing, which I think is, if you can have that culture, it's very opening. But then what that leads to is then every job change becomes about what your deficiency is. You know, when I left aviation from that first job and I came to corporate, I really needed a big ERP experience. And so they gave me the opportunity to run our global human resource systems, which run on an Oracle platform. So I got to continue to build off of my skills of knowing technology. I got to go deep in ERP. I got to learn a new function. And so I was able to check off a deficiency in that box. When I got done with that job and we started to look at what other gaps did I have, I had never had a product-facing role. And so the next job that they moved me into had me working in supply chain, where I was working with product that was going out the door every day. I saw what it took to make product. I saw the process around product. And so that's really what's embedded in our culture, is the company is as much a training ground, as much as an executive MBA program, as it is a large conglomerate. And that's really how they run the leadership of the program, is we want to move people around into different roles to challenge them. Coming into this job, Peter, the benefit that that's given me is as I know the way the company runs. Having seen all these businesses, I know where they're different, and I know where they're not. And in my role, knowing where they're not different now is really helping me accelerate on where do we centralize certain functions versus what functions and what technologies and what IT areas need to remain close to the business and at the edge of the organization. But again, that's all because we've built this model that identifies the next job based on what gaps you have and what you need to build from a career perspective.
And I certainly wouldn't ask you for specific names, but how early into your current role will you start to think about the person who can succeed you? Is that something you've already begun to think about? Is it something that's likely to be in the second year in role? How early in the process does that sort of thought process begin to enter into what you're doing?
Really in the first 60 days. One of the things that we maintain at all levels of the organization is a very robust succession plan. It's literally part of our planning tools. We literally will go in and we'll list out 2 to 3 people that we feel can fill not only our job, but every one of our direct reports jobs and what we think the timing of that person getting into that role is. I've actually already filled it out for my staff. We've got some idea of who up-and-coming leaders are that we need to groom to be ready to fill roles at certain times. And more importantly, should we have an unfortunate event, like someone leaving unexpectedly, we can react quickly. Interesting story. You talked to me last when I was in our capital business. Me taking that job was somewhat of a surprise. We had the CIO of that business decide to leave for an external opportunity. First thing they did was pull out the succession plan, and my name was on that succession plan, and it caused me to get a call to say, hey, we need you to step up and take this role. It wasn't on the timing necessarily that was expected, but that plan was in place, and it allowed them to announce a replacement at the same time they announced that that person was leaving. So that's a hallmark of how we do succession planning across the company.
You talked about the preparation again in coming into this role and just frankly the tremendous preparation of the breadth of your experience that that has provided in addition to the collaboration that you had with Jamie Miller prior to the change. How have you organized your time in the couple of months that you've been in role so far? How have you thought about spending time with colleagues, developing your plans, seeking out quick wins perhaps, other things that might have been on the list?
You know, it's kind of silly, but for the last 5 years, I've always looked at a book called The First 90 Days. And I think The First 90 Days lays it out really well. It gives you some guidelines on how to lay it out. And I reopen that book every time I start a new job. And so for what that's looked like for me is the first 30 days is all about listening. Don't make any decisions. Go meet with as many of your team at multiple levels of the organization, multiple skip levels. Spend a lot of time with your business partners. So I spent time with everybody from our CEO, Jeff Immelt, to our digital leader, Bill Rue, to each of the CEOs of each of the individual GE businesses to get their feedback on the function and to hear what was important to them. Use that first 30 days to identify critical initiatives, critical early wins that I want to make sure I deliver to help me gain credibility in the role. I think it's always important to know what's important, but also to show that you're listening and have some critical early wins to gain credibility with the team at large. And then once you've done that, the next 30 days is starting to lay out what the imperatives are and to start to socialize that. So I've already got a list of what I think the 6 priorities for the function are. I've presented it out to most of the businesses, most of the business leaders, and I've, I would say, honed it and modified it as I've gotten feedback. And then the last 30 days is really about then getting the mechanisms in place. And I've already announced what my work structure is going to be. We've already made the appropriate changes to get that in place. We've laid out an action plan for next year to achieve goals and objectives. We set clear targets, both financial, but also a lot of critical metrics that we need to drive going into next year. And we're at the point now and where I'm kind of at the last half of the 90 days where we're pushing that out and communicating it and making sure everybody is clear how what they're doing relates back to those roles. So that's my approach. That's what I go through usually in the kind of the first 90 days of a job.
Jim, you spoke about the structuring of your first 90 days in a variety of different roles. Can you talk a bit about some of the tactical actions that you take in the early stages of your tenure?
Yeah, you know, the first thing that I think every CIO has to do is to make sure they got operations right. So step one for me is making sure that we've got the right incident management processes, the operations processes in place to make sure that we continue to maintain stable ops. The biggest derailer for somebody in my role is having operations go off the rails. And so I start there. And then the second one is making sure that we're really thinking about cybersecurity well. You know, I just spent an hour and a half with our board of directors last week, briefing them on the actions that we're taking to protect our intellectual property. There's not a CIO alive who I don't think understands the importance of making sure you've got secure infrastructure and that you're protecting data and that you're constantly trying to stay ahead of that curve. And so for me, those are the 2 tactical items that if those go off the rail, none of the rest of what I'm working on right now is going to matter. So that's always where I start when I start into a job.
One quick follow-up point to that, you know, security is such an important and growing in its complexity for companies, for chief information officers. GE is one of the legendary companies when it comes to innovation, a topic that is on the minds of any executive across the organization. And I wonder how you think about the balance between the risk-taking that innovation requires versus the risk mitigation that security requires. The fact that there's almost this paradox that a CIO especially needs to bear in mind when he or she is managing those and ensuring that it is not out of balance.
Yeah, you know, the question I get from the board quite often is, how do you know when enough is enough? Because this is the space where you could spend endlessly on different areas of technology. And the way I answer that question is you've got to be able to stratify your data. And so across the company, we've categorized our data into three categories. There's a category we call the crown jewels. This is a set of data that we felt, if lost, would provide a huge competitive disadvantage to the company. It's somewhat our secret sauce in how a lot of our products are made, and that gets a certain amount of spending and focus and protection based on what we think the losses of the company could be. The second is then what we call critical business information, and our critical business information we lay out kind of as another layer. It wouldn't have as high cost and high penalty if that information was lost or if that type of exposure happened, but it is significant and it would be significant to the stock price. And then there's a third category, which is our general business information. By having that stratification, Peter, it's allowed us to answer the question on when are you spending enough? And we base it back on what we think the financial impact could be to each one of those. So by stratifying the data, I don't have to spend the same amount of money to protect all data, but I'm protecting the data based on the level of loss that we think we could have. And that's really resonated with folks. It helps them get their arms around it and helps us understand, frankly, what the real risk is financially to the company from a reputation perspective, but also from a bottom line perspective.
And I imagine also it's a way to make this accessible to people who may be involved in the decision process that are not as familiar as you are of the technical details of making it clear the risks and which data to shore up first due to the highest level of risks associated with those. That must be a way to make this a bit more of an accessible conversation. Is that fair?
It is. The other way that we've been doing that is talking about the layers of defense, right? There's not one silver bullet to cybersecurity, as everyone knows. And so we've broken it down into four categories of defense. One is, you know, what are we doing to protect the environment? What are we doing to detect when we do have a breach? Because we know that we're not going to be able to protect against everything. What are we doing to respond when an event occurs? And what are we doing to remediate when an event happens? And then overlying all of that is a governance structure to make sure that it's being governed across the company and all the business units in exactly the same way. So by having kind of that model, along with the understanding of the value and the risk associated with the data, it becomes a much easier conversation on why and where we're spending money.
Jim, I certainly appreciate you taking time again to speak with us on the forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation, understanding a bit about the way in which you've thought about things, where you're spending your time, how you're prioritizing your activities. Wish you all the best in your current role.
Great. Thanks, Peter.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.